Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Instacart's Deal Week is coming up from December 17th to December 23rd. That means you can get up to 25% off holiday gifts for the whole family from stores like Best Buy, Bath & Body Works, PetSmart, and more. And you can get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Just think of it as Instacart's little gift to you. And while we're on the subject, why not get a little something for yourself, too? Shop Deal Week from December 17th to 23rd and save up to 25% on gifts. Discounts vary. Minimum spend, maximum discount, and exclusions apply.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Welcome on into our Treasure Chest Thursday. Steve Geller along with Mike Dettillier bring it till 7 o'clock when we'll have Thursday Night Football on 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. Meanwhile, on 870 AM, the Pelicans on the road this evening taking on the Houston Rockets. And we have a jam-packed show for you today. Like I said, we're here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Danny Cannell will be joining us on the line at 420 talking about the college football playoff and some of the odds on the teams in those matchups. Also, at 5:20, Ryan Wood, Packers beat writer for the Green Bay Press Gazette, I'll be breaking down the pack as they get ready to host the New Orleans Saints Monday Night Football. And don't know if you saw the scene out there today from Packers practice, but it was a snowy affair out there. So we'll see. It might could be a white Monday night for the black and gold to deal with. 5:40, Sean Kelly, voice of the Florida Gators, will help us preview their matchup in the Gasparilla Bowl against Tulane. Then at 6:25, Ollie Kozel, who is our credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans, will help us preview this matchup against Houston. That's a 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off over on 870 AM. Black and gold back on the field today, Mike, after a little bit of a break. And we got our first initial injury report for week 16. No surprise, Derek Carr is still not practicing. Alvin Kamara was not around either, dealing with a groin issue. Darren Rizzi says that it is a little more serious than they expected, which is not nice to hear.
No, you sort of read into that we may have seen the last of Alvin this season with the Saints. And, man, he's had just a terrific year. In a year that didn't have a lot of highs after week two, man, Kamara's been a bright spot on this football team, all-around player as a runner, receiver coming out of the backfield. He's been really one of the few bright spots on this team past week two.
Also not practicing today, Mike. Bub Means, the rookie wide receiver, still dealing with that ankle issue. Unfortunately, another wide receiver on the list, Marquez Valdes-Scantley, dealing with a chest injury. Also, Chase Young, the defensive end, popping up with an illness that's been going around the facility over there. Limited to practice, Juwan Johnson with a foot. Good to see Chris Olave starting to get back in the mix. He was limited at practice.
So his 21-day window is now open for Chris. Because I'll be honest with you, I didn't think we'd probably see Chris the rest of the year. And that he's come back. We'll see how his body kind of takes now to the practicing and everything else. Because, you know, when you come off a concussion, and he had a couple of them this year, you know, that's which is the most important part of it, to make sure that you don't have any ill effects after working out. And in practice sometimes, you know, they might give you a little chuck here and there. And so you see a little bit of physicality. Not much, but a little bit of it.
Good news was that Coach Rizzi said that things were all positive from the specialists he visited about the concussions. He was happy to be back on the field today, but he did say really doubtful to be ready for Monday Night Football this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't think
he's missed a lot of practice time, right?
He's missed a lot of time. And
although, man, we are hurting at that wide receiver position.
It ain't a flip of the switch.
You might think it's just easy to get back on the field.
Yeah, but it's not. And Valdes-Scantling coming up on that injury report, that shows up big, you know, because you were without Olave. You were without Rashid Shaheed. And now Bub Means has been down for a couple weeks with the ankle injury. And now MVS shows up with a chest injury. You have to explain me that, Steve, but that chest injury.
Kool-Aid McKinstry also on the injury report, dealing with a shoulder injury, but good news was he was a full go of practice. Obviously, all those injuries we'll keep monitoring throughout the week as his team gets ready for their trip up to Green Bay. Over on the Packers side, not practicing for them, safety Javon Bullard and linebacker Quay Walker, cornerback Corey Ballantyne, and Jari Alexander was a full go of practice. Ballantyne was limited with a knee issue, and then also tight end Luke Musgrave limited with an ankle issue. Obviously, Jair Alexander coming back in the mix for the Packers, a huge deal for them. We don't even have raw receivers, though, for them to cover.
Well, one thing with Jair, he's one of the best in the business, and man, Javon Bullard has been terrific as a rookie player for them. Dealing with an ankle injury, and then Quay Walker, saw him so many times at Georgia. Man, can he run the field? And the one thing that sticks out at me this year that's a little different from a year ago, I think they're so much better coached on the defensive side of football. And, man, they get after you. And they can run the football with Josh Jacobs. It's amazing. You know, that flip over, the Raiders didn't want to pay him, and so he signs on with the Packers. And they had a good player in Aaron Jones who goes to Minnesota, and he's having a good season there. Josh Jacobs is a different dude. I mean, as far as Aaron Jones is concerned, I mean, he's a step up and just a terrific runner. And in December and January, when you're going to have weather games, I want that guy toting the rock. And their defense is really, really much better, much more disciplined than it was a year ago.
Coach Darren Rizzi for the Saints also saying, if Derek Carr cannot suit up on Monday Night Football, it will be Spencer Rattler at quarterback for the black and gold. Obviously, he provided them with a spark in that game against the Commanders, gave him a shot to win the game. And I know a lot of people still kind of disappointed about the outcome there of going for two instead of for one. But I think overall it was the right play for them, because there's no way you wanted to go into overtime against the Commanders with Jaden Daniels being able to run up and down the field.
If that bothers you, you got to turn the page on that. I mean, come on, that's long ago as far as games are concerned, but he shows a spark there. And you need to see a little bit more of him, because what we saw earlier in the year, Stevie, was disappointing in that he didn't seem to have a good feel of the offense. He seemed to be uncomfortable in some of the throws. This past week, though, I thought his command of the game, his accuracy skills, his ability to kind of pivot a little bit left and right and throw the ball a little bit on movement was very good, much more improved than we had saw him the first time around. Now, he's dealing with another defensive team now. Yeah. They're far different from the Commanders, and that'll be a huge test for Spencer Rattler. I doubt seriously we're going to see Derek Carr play Monday. Same thing with Kamara. You're not going to see him either.
No, I wouldn't think so.
And Kendra Miller, it's your time.
I always keep saying now, it's Miller time.
It's Miller time.
Do you think a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, obviously now on the practice squad, could be elevated on game day and have limited snaps, or still too soon for him?
Why not? Okay, it's not that complicated to carry the rock.
Take ball, see hole, hit hole.
And you know, one thing, he's been sort of nicked up a little bit with the Chiefs, and, man, he had a big fan in Andy Reid.
Yeah.
I was telling this to Cullen yesterday that a lot of the guys at Louisiana Line Camp, they got three coaches from the Chiefs that come every year, and they say the biggest fan of Clyde Edwards-Helaire in Kansas City, Andy Reid.
Big Red.
And Andy loved him there. But, again, it comes to a point where you got to move on. It's not working for you. It's not working for him. You got to part ways. And, man, what a great run he had at LSU to finish it off. And I remember Joe Brady telling me this a couple of days after the national championship game. We would not have won it without Clyde in that lineup. He was a big part of it. Rushed for over 1,400 yards, was a really good receiver coming out the backfield, could protect Joe when they had a lot of blitz stuff coming from the inside. And just hope he can get that magic back to him.
We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino, taking you till 7 o'clock. There's Thursday Night Football in action. The L.A. Rams taking on the Denver Broncos. The L.A. Chargers, sorry, taking on the Denver Broncos. And then also the Pelicans over on 870 AM will be in Houston to battle the Rockets. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some college football playoff talk and some of the odds going into those matchups with Danny Cannell, CBS Sports Analyst, coming back after the break here on WWL right after this.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go 5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gearing up for all the college bowl games and the college football playoff. Starting this weekend, we're talking with Danny Cannell now, CBS Sports College Football Analyst, courtesy of Bet Online for updated college football playoff bowl game and 2025 opening Heisman lines. Check out Bet Online. Danny, how you been doing today?
I am fantastic, fellas. It's great to be on with you, man. I'm fired up for this weekend. I don't know about you guys, but it's going to be fun to watch some of these playoff games on campus. Cannot wait.
Yeah, Danny, it's awesome to watch. Right off the bat, I'll ask you about Tennessee, Ohio State, because that to me is an intriguing game. I know it's played, you know, in Ohio State's turf, but the way they ended the year, the mindset with that football team. And, man, Tennessee is damn good. That front seven they got on defense is really good. Secondary's a little shaky, but they can run the football, which is part of Josh Heupel's kind of DNA. They're more known for throwing it, but they really run it well. Well, I think it comes down to this. Which one of the quarterbacks can actually make something happen? Because I do know one thing. Nico, man, when he's on, he's on. But when he's off, man, he's awful. And Howard is kind of the same way with Ohio State. Your thoughts on Tennessee, Ohio State, which may be a weather-related game also.
Yes, absolutely it's going to be. By the way, Tennessee leads the SEC in rushing,
yep.
To your point. I think that's one of the things about Josh Heupel is that people think of them as though they're just throwing it all over the yard. They always want to run the football first. And with a young quarterback like Nico, who struggled somewhat, they've really showcased that ability. And Dylan Sampson, probably the best running back in the SEC. He's been great. But I do think Ohio State is going to try to take away that with everything they've got. Their defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, if I'm him, I am loading up the box, putting 8 or 9 guys up there and saying, you are not going to beat us. And make Nico beat them on the outside, a place that Ohio State has been vulnerable. They've given up some plays through the air this season. But you mentioned the weather, and I'm very curious to see what impact that has on Tennessee, you know, traveling up there. Now, it's not like Florida where I live. Tennessee, it still gets cold, but the expectation that it will be below freezing, you know, 30 degrees at kickoff, and it could be pretty cold at prime time. I wonder how that impacts. And you mentioned Nico. Where he struggled this year specifically is on the road. Like, that's been the spot where he struggled. Now, is it environment? Is it the fans that get to him? Or is it probably the teams that he's faced against? Because one of those teams that he struggled against was the University of Georgia, who everybody struggled with, right? So that's not one. But he did struggle on the road against Arkansas. He struggled somewhat against Oklahoma. He just hasn't been the same person away from Neyland Stadium. So I'm a bit concerned about him. But what you did hit on there was Will Howard, who had 2 interceptions against Michigan, had a pick 6 against Penn State as well. He needs to step up. And I think he's probably the most pressure-packed player in this game because the Ohio State Buckeyes probably going to go as far as he takes them. But I think Chip Kelly will open it up, something they didn't do against Michigan. I thought they were too conservative. I thought they played tight. I think they need to loosen it up, let it kind of cut it loose a little bit through the air, and Will Howard with his legs. To me, that's the difference because I don't think they're going to run the ball with much success against James Pearson company. That front seven for Tennessee is pretty nasty. But they can throw the ball, I think, better with Jeremiah Smith, one of the best receivers in the country. That, I think, is the difference in the game.
Yeah, I do know one thing. I know where that Dylan Sampson went to high school and where he grew up. He Baton Rouge kid, went from the state of Louisiana. Man, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but, man, he's got great vision. He can get up the field. Your thoughts on the Battle of Indiana as the Hoosiers, they play the Fighting Irish, and that'll be tomorrow.
Yeah, and that game's supposed to be, you know, 20 degrees, potentially snow. I hope we get it. I mean, we're playing a playoff game at the most iconic, you know, historic, you know, program in college football at Notre Dame. Here's the thing, though. I think Notre Dame is ripe for an upset. Indiana is a good football team. Like, they're not a Cinderella story who was kind of fluky. And I know people want to criticize their schedule because it was weak, but they dominated their entire schedule, the teams that they were supposed to beat. And one thing that I think went a really long way with them, they did lose to Ohio State, but they got the experience of playing on the road in a hostile environment. And Kirk Cignetti was actually talking about that was the first time he had ever used silent snap count, where they didn't have a snap count. They went with a silent cadence. He said he would never do it again. He thought it killed his offensive line. He said he doesn't care. Like, that learning experience, I think, helps them. Notre Dame's not the loudest stadium you'll go into. And I think their defense is able to slow down Riley Leonard, who does not like to throw the football. But I think that's the battle there that will take place. I think Indiana's one of the better run defenses in the country. I think they're able to slow down Notre Dame, make it a close game. If you're a little bit nervous about the outright upset, I still love Indiana with the points. But I think they can actually win this thing and advance to the next round in South Bend.
Danny, I don't know how you feel about it, but to see how it bracketed off, We'll talk about SMU Penn State. To see Penn State catches SMU. Nothing against SMU, but man, to me, Penn State's got a lot more talent than SMU. But in big games, James Franklin, he ain't won squat, nothing. But if you get past SMU, then you get Boise State. You win those next two games, you've punched that ticket with a legitimate shot to play for the national championship, but he's got to do it. My old buddy Rich Marty, former Penn State guy, he said, Mike, if they lose against SMU, you better not drive me over anything that got water because I'm fixing to jump at this stage. But your thoughts on SMU, Penn State?
I agree, and that's been a hot topic, and I think most people do have Penn State advancing to the semifinals. And then what's even crazier, they could face Georgia without their quarterback. Like, we still don't know if Carson Beck is going to play, so like that could be a huge edge for them as well. So they absolutely have the path, which I do think puts a lot of pressure on James Franklin. But the good news is SMU is not a top five team, and neither is Boise State. Like, that's the teams they lose to are the top five teams, and to get there, they can play two that aren't there. I do think they're able to overwhelm SMU with their physicality. Abdul Carter is one of the best pass rushers in the country. Their front seven is physical. I think they're able to contain Kevin Jennings, the SMU quarterback. But what concerns me the most for SMU is the defense, being able to slow down Penn State's two-headed monster in the backfield. Nick Singleton and Katron Allen, they both rushed over 100 yards against Oregon. I think they'll do the same against SMU. Like, I think SMU is going to struggle to get off the field. Tyler Warren, the superstar tight end, does it all. He plays tight end. He plays wide receiver. He plays wildcat. He's going to be too much. I do think Penn State wins this game, and I do like them to win big, like by 10 points or more. But I do think I like the over in that game, too, because I think Rhett Lashley's a great offensive mind. They'll figure it out. I just think it'll be a little bit too little too late. But I do like a lot of points in that game. And I do like Penn State actually to win against Boise as well. Another game, they'll be a double-digit favorite if they do win against SMU. They'll be a double-digit favorite against Boise State as well. They do have the clearest path to the national championship of anybody.
I picked Texas to get to the national championship game, and from a talent standpoint, you can see it. I wonder a bit about Quinn at the quarterback position. It's almost like he's really conservative in throwing the ball downfield. He doesn't have a lot of movement skills. It may come to a point somewhere along the line where Sarkisian pulls like what Nick Saban did. You know, Jalen wasn't getting it done at national championship game, and he pulled him, and all of a sudden Tua comes out of the phone booth like Superman and ends up winning it for him. Your thoughts on Texas, Clemson? It's an intriguing matchup because of how Clemson got there, which is a really unconventional, how they were able to get to this point in the season. Texas is where I think everybody thought they'd be. Now can they close the deal?
Yeah, and that's the question. And their schedule was pretty light. Like, their best win is probably Texas A&M last game of the year in College Station, but that is still an 8-4 team. Other than that, it's probably Vanderbilt. And then the team that they played twice, the best opponent, they lost both of those games. And I am 100% with you on Quinn Ewers. I feel like something is off. Like, it's still either it's his oblique injury, whether it's his ankle. He's not stepping into the football. He's throwing a lot of like these bloopers, like his shorter, like intermediate kind of, like he puts a lot of air under it instead of ripping it and cutting it loose. He just feels off. And I was actually surprised Arch Manning didn't play a little bit more in the SEC championship game. I almost wonder if Sark was holding him back for the playoffs, like when it really matters. And I do think he probably has a package for him against Clemson. I do think Clemson is a dangerous opponent because of exactly what you were talking about. The fact that they weren't even supposed to be here, they're playing with house money. Like, they are loose. They are thinking nobody's expecting us to win. I like Clemson with the points. I don't hate them if you're looking for upsets to pull it off. I think it totally makes sense why Texas is a favorite to win the national championship, because while we've talked a lot about Ohio State's $20 million roster, no one has noticed that Texas has a $22 million roster, right? Like, they have talent, and that defense is nasty. That's what I think rides them to the national championship. We can talk about Quinn Ewers' struggles in the offense, but the defense is national championship worthy. That's why I like the under in this game as well, because that thing I think we're sleeping on is Clemson's defense, who did a really good job with the Norris Sellers, except for three plays in that game. They pretty much contained him, and you don't have the run threat that they had at South Carolina. for Clemson to stop. So I actually like Clemson to keep this a lower scoring game. I like Texas to win, but I like Clemson with the points and the under.
Your thoughts on how it kind of broke down in the ACC this year, you know, with Clemson and SMU, the new arrival, the new kid in town. But all season long, it looked as though the Hurricanes were going to be the team to be in that Final 12, and it didn't happen. But they really got back into the football spotlight this year, much more than I think a lot of people thought they'd be.
Agreed. And what's crazy is that the Miami Hurricanes, they have been in the ACC now for, I'm trying to find the exact year of when they started, 2004, 20 years, and they have not won an ACC championship game. That is baffling, and I think it's very frustrating for Miami Hurricane fans. And what's more frustrating is that the start of the season, the way they came out of the gates, the way they smoked the Florida Gators in Gainesville, the way they were handling their business early, it felt like this was the year. They had a special quarterback in Cam Ward, and then they lose two out of their last three games. And I know they're good opponents. Like, Georgia Tech's a good team. We saw them take Georgia, yep, you know, to overtime. Syracuse is 9-3. They're a top 25 team. But you just can't lose those if you're Miami. You have more talent than those. I think while, yes, it was a pleasant surprise, it also was one of the more disappointing seasons because you were just on the outside and you're on the outside looking in. And guess who's not going to be there next year? Cam Ward. That defense yeah, has been atrocious. So, like, the ACC, I think they're glad they got two teams in, but I think it would have been better for the league to have Miami and probably Clemson in. And I do think SMU coming in the first year of the league and winning it, or, you know, getting to the ACC championship game and coming up just short, I think that kind of speaks to the volatility of the league and maybe the lack of depth that a newcomer could come in right away and challenge.
Danny, curious your perception of the Gasparilla Bowl tomorrow. Some local interest there. Obviously, Tulane taking on Florida, and the Green Wave enter this matchup heavy underdogs, 13.5 points. What do you see in this matchup between the two?
Well, I mean, I tell you one thing. This is bowl season, so you got to find out who's playing. And without Darian Mensah, yeah, who was really I think that's a big upgrade for Duke. And Malik Murphy had a good year for Duke. But, like, this is one of the things I hate, and I'll vent a little bit because I think the college football calendar is broken. Like, I don't think the portal should open until February, until the entire season is open. And I know we have to worry about academics, but can't we figure out a way to get players eligible and let them take online classes and transfer after? They have signing day the week of the conference championship games. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, the whole thing is broken. So, like, the first thing you have to look at when you're analyzing bowl games is who's playing. Like, that is a major flaw in the system. And without Mensah, I do think that hurts. They also lost Kai Horton. Like, they've lost a lot of players. And then you've got Florida, who comes in, and they're getting everybody playing. Like, DJ Lagway, who was really a bright spot of the season, he's playing. They win their last three games in a row to kind of build some momentum. I think, you know, typically in a year, you might see Florida's not happy to play in this game. Tulane is looking for the upset against an SEC team. That would bode well for Tulane. I think the point spread is big for a reason. I think Florida's looking to cap off the end of the season with a strong win, and I think it could be overwhelming for Tulane, especially without Mensah. So I'm bummed. Like, I'm more bummed about the system and how broken it is because we have to evaluate who's playing and who's not in these bowl games.
Danny, last question for you. It got ruled yesterday that junior college players now would have a full 4 years of eligibility at another school. Your thoughts on that? Because that, I think, is going to change perception a little bit about hitting the JUCO ranks.
Oh, absolutely it will. And if I'm a program, if I'm an SEC program, ACC, whatever, I'm going to get players that I already know can play at a pretty elite level. Like, we've seen a lot of guys that played at the junior college. I mean, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers, Diego Pavia, who's, you know, the reason this thing is about. And I played with Walter Jones, who was a Hall of Famer along the offensive line at Florida State, came from a JUCO. Like, there is a wealth of talent. And now the best part about it is you can get them for 4 years. Like, right now, the challenge that teams are looking at is, well, you can go get a guy who finally proved his value, but he might be a junior or senior, and you're only going to have him for a year. It's only hard to build continuity, hard to get him acclimated to your system. Now you can go probably get players pretty reasonably priced in the NIL market from the JUCO ranks, and they're essentially a freshman. when, you know, you get a freshman typically is somebody who's green. You have no idea. You're going to miss on some of them. Some of them might be overwhelmed from academics, the size jump, the IQ of being in a college football playbook. It's all a huge jump. Now you've got guys you know are already acclimated. I think it's going to be a big boon to get those players for 4 years. And I also think it's going to hurt high school recruits, which sucks, because I think it's going to be harder for them to find a scholarship spot because they'd probably rather have somebody that's a little bit more proven than a three-star coming out of high school who now probably will either have to go somewhere lower or even JUCO themselves.
Danny, always appreciate your time and insights. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny.
Oh, you guys the best. Always enjoy being on. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Thank for you, sure, you too. Appreciate it. Danny Cannell, courtesy of Bet Online. You can check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff bowl game and the 2025 opening Heisman lines. We didn't get into it there, Mike, but kind of funny to see atop those Heisman Trophy odds for next year, Arch Manning, 7-1 odd, leads the way, and right under him, Garrett Nussmeier at 9-1.
Oh, man, you know, you think I'll. Really, Lil Arch hadn't played. You know, now he may finish the season playing a lot,
right?
But him to be the favorite to win the Heisman, wow! It goes to show you, and also go to show you something. You can bet on anything today, can't you? You can bet on the Heisman for 2025. We ain't finished the 2024 season yet.
Well, we're going to break right now. We'll finish this segment. We'll take a break, come back with more sports talk. You can join us here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're here until 7, getting ready for Thursday Night Football on 105.3 FM. Pelicans versus Houston Rockets over on the big 870 AM. We're coming back with more sports talk right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We got Thursday Night Football kicking off Week 16 this week. It's going to be the Los Angeles Chargers, who are 8-6, hosting the Denver Broncos, who are 9-5. And man, oh man, wouldn't you know, Sean Payton in year two has really turned things around for those Broncos. Even though all that criticism with that dead money, obviously they took with releasing Russell Wilson.
Doing it a different way.
Yeah.
Winning with defense. Got a lot of no-name guys on the offensive side of football. Now, Cortland Sutton, a lot of people know at wide receiver. But
other than that, right?
Other than that, your tight end is Adam Trautman. And you look at their running back core, they strong up front. Offensive line's pretty good. And Bo Nix, you ride the roller coaster with him.
You mentioned that defense. I saw a game he threw three interceptions. Oh, but they still won the game.
They still won. and so, man, their defense is saving their bacon. And that's not a tip what you think of typically of a Sean Payton coach team to have that type defense.
Looking at this game, too, the Chargers come into the matchup as 2.5-point favorites. They're obviously in a tight battle to trying to get into that playoff conversation, too. And, you know, there's been ups and downs with Herbert this year. You feel like he's been dealing with some injuries on and off all year long.
Yeah, and their secondary's leaky, too.
Yeah.
You know, the Saints couldn't take advantage of that, but you see other teams have. And if they don't get a good pass rush, man, that's vulnerable there. And, you know, you see with Harbaugh, he's still got pieces of the puzzle to put in place on the offensive side, especially at wide receiver. But, you know, they're going to win a certain way. They're going to run the ball. They're going to stop the run. And, you know, it's old-fashioned football, but they do have a star quarterback. I mean, Justin is a big-time quarterback. Just how far will you go when you don't have other people around you to really help you in a big manner?
Yeah, you mentioned in that, Mike, and I feel like both teams offensively need to provide more weapons for their quarterbacks.
That'll be high on the list in the offseason for both.
Looking at we also have some games over the weekend on Saturday this week. Going into it, Houston at Kansas City. Andy Reid saying today that Patrick Mahomes will be playing. There was fear of him missing the game because of a high ankle sprain, but it looks like it's nothing that serious for him where he'll be able to still suit up in this matchup. Of course, the Kansas City Chiefs always seem to have everything going their way.
My thing is you better have a pretty damn big lead when you play them in the fourth quarter.
Unreal.
They catch you. One way or another, they sort of catch
it. Right, fourth quarter hits like, oh, it's time to turn it up a notch.
We'll play. We'll win this one. So for the Texans, who have been there, done that, they had a big lead against them at one time, and that got whittled away, and they ended up losing. It means more to the Texans, to be honest with you. When you look at how the playoff situation is going to break down, it means a lot more to the Texans than, say, would be if the Chiefs lost here. But and the Texans are a tough out. Man, with CJ, they can run the football with Joe Mixon. Got Nico Collins back healthy at wide receiver. Their defense, has been solid this year. I didn't think it played as well as it did a year ago, but they've sustained some injuries, and not having Will Anderson for a while certainly hurt them. Man, that'll be a watch game for me.
Have you got to see a lot of C.J. Stroud this year?
Yep.
Because I know, obviously, last season, all that buzz around him, what he was able to do as a rookie, and it appears, stat-wise at least, he's obviously taken a little bit of dip in production from a year ago.
He's also getting hit a lot more. Man, their offensive line
right,
is
so
not too good.
Right, so does teams have that tape on him now? Is that what it
yeah,
is?
Yeah, and partially, too, I didn't think their offensive line has played real well this
yeah.
year either. Man, they're leaky on both sides, left and right. And so CJ now, you know, you're kind of putting a bind a little bit. But once they get a little bit of tape, they can take away bits and pieces of your game. But I think really in this offseason, the Texans are going to have to redo that offensive line. I think that has become the Achilles heel for this football team.
And then looking at the later game on Saturday, it's going to be the 10-4 Pittsburgh Steelers against the 9-5 Baltimore Ravens. I mean, who would have guessed at this point of the year that Steelers would have a better record than Baltimore?
Not too many. And Baltimore got to go back to what was winning for them early, and
no
that's
kidding.
Running Derrick Henry. Okay, that's all great and fine to throw the football. And you need that to win it all. But to get to this point, you need Big Derrick to take over in these type of games going up against the Steelers, you know, and kind of try to wear them down a little bit. And, you know, Derek, every once in a while, man, he's going to hit that big play on you. And
sure.
The more and more you run it, the Steelers will creep that safety up in the box, and then I can go over the top with you.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. Come join us here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're here till 7 p.m. Then we'll hand things off to Thursday Night Football. That's between the L.A. Chargers and the Denver Broncos on 105.3 FM on 870 AM at 7 p.m. is tip-off between the Pelicans and Houston Rockets. But taking a break right now, we'll be back with more of Sports Talk right after this. No Saints Sunday, but if you live, work, or play on the West Bank, meet up with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and Mike Dettillier Sunday, a special edition of Sports Talk from the Rouse's Market, Bell Chase Highway. The guys will be there from 1 to 4 p.m. on WWL and the free Odyssey app. You can check them out live as well. Coming up next hour, getting into some Green Bay Packers talk with Ryan Wood, who covers them for the Green Bay Press Gazette, and also Florida Gators, Sean Kelly, voice of, will join us as well. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest right after this. What is up, everybody? It is Thursday, so we are at the Treasure Chest Casino as we count down to Thursday Night Football, 7 o'clock on 105.3 FM. Pelicans basketball over on 870 AM. Also gearing up, Monday Night Football this week is in Green Bay. The Green Bay Packers hosting the New Orleans Saints, and a matchup that everybody is interested in to see what's going to happen at quarterback. Derek Carr not practicing again today, dealing with that left-hand injury. So we're saying that he's going to get through that concussion protocol, no problem, but that left hand, still an issue for him. And the big one, though, Alvin Kamara not practicing with a groin issue. Coach Darren Rizzi stating that it's a little worse than they expected. They're going to do some more testing on it, but do not expect him to even play in this matchup on Monday night.
No, but we got a guy just come sit down. He can tell us all about that coordinating on that medical side of it. Dean Kleinsmith here with us and joining us at the Treasure Chest. Great to have you here, Dean. Great seeing you, brother.
Appreciate it. We're going to get into our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Phil on the line first. What you want to say to me and Mike today? What's going on, Phil?
Hey, guys. Happy holidays to y'all.
Same to you, brother.
Mike, I was a little surprised that Clyde was a healthy scratch all season for the Chiefs. What was the problem?
Part of it, too, and he's admitted it, you know, that was an incident that happened at LSU that he's still dealing with some post-traumatic stress issues with. And it got the best of him a little bit during the summer. Andy Reid worked with him on that to try to get him back on the field. It just didn't work in Kansas City. But to answer your question, that's pretty much what it was about.
Okay. Okay. Well, outside of that, as far as, I mean, he ought to have fresh legs then.
Yes, he should. And listen, he was a big part. Just hope the magic can come back for Clyde because he was such a good player for Coach O and that 2019 National Championship team. And he good all around back. And that one memory, somebody texted me yesterday, but the one memory you got about Clyde, Alabama. Late in the game, Clyde had rushed for over 100 yards. He catches 9 passes in that game. LSU's got to get a first down, or they got to punt it, and Tua would have one more shot to get him. Clyde getting that first down. Man, you should have heard. Man, we were doing post-game, Channel 4, me and Doug Mouton. Yeah. You'd have swore they had 20 people in there when Clyde got that first down. Man, I was so proud of Clyde, and great to see LSU win there. But that's that one big memory I have of Clyde in that Alabama game. And then him and his dad hugging on the field afterwards, and something about it.
Hopefully, Phil, we get a resurgence from him coming back home to Louisiana, maybe spark something in him because, obviously, yeah, everyone here is pulling for the guy. And unfortunately, like Mike was saying, for whatever reason, it just didn't work out in Kansas City.
And he's built like a little tank. I mean, he's a little over 5'7", but not much over. And, man, he's all a 215, 220. So when you hit him, you can't get too much lower than he is. So you better get him, and you better get him quick.
His build kind of reminds me of Mark Ingram. Would that be correct?
You know what it reminds me a little bit of? He's a little heavy. He reminds me a little bit of Dalton. Dalton hear you, because okay. Dalton was not a real tall guy either. But, man, Dalton was pieced together now. Man, from the waist down, Dalton was built. And sort of Clyde is in the same sort of build with that. And Mark's not that much bigger, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Phil, definitely appreciate the time. You got anything else?
No, that's it. Again, happy holidays to y'all. Appreciate
Same
it.
Same to you, bud.
From Phil, we're going to go to Mr. Bill. Oh, no. Mr. Bill's on the line. What you got for us today, Mr. Bill?
How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Mr. Bill. Oh, I know who you are now, brother. How you been?
Well, I'm doing okay. I'll be 88 tomorrow.
Whoa. Hey.
Happy early birthday.
Early happy birthday to you, Mr. Bill. We miss seeing you. We were doing a pregame outside, and you would always come around. So, you're not doing no more relays, are you?
2 years ago, my wife took sick, and I had to take a leave from work.
Okay.
And that's the way with Walmart, 23 years, they took me off their payroll.
Oh, okay.
They stopped all my benefits and stopped all my pay.
Man, Mr. Bill, I hate to hear that, brother. I hate to hear it.
Well, and I'll be 88 tomorrow, and for 2 years, my wife been almost bedridden, and I had to take and leave work and to take care of her around the clock.
God bless you. I know that's a difficult job. I had both my parents similar manner.
This year, I took and I missed most of the games, but that's the first time I missed him in just 1956.
Hmm. Wow. Now, I know you were a regular there always. I used to see you long before Hebert, but that's really not saying a lot. Bob would come kind of rolling in at the 10 o'clock mark, but Mr. Bill was always there early for our pregame show.
Oh, yeah.
So what you seeing out of these Saints this year? How are you feeling about Spencer Rattler taking over at quarterback on Monday Night Football?
I guess it's all right. They all got to get a chance, you know.
But what we saw.
Telling you about is why they don't block out Moore for Kamara.
What were you saying about Alvin?
They don't block out for him enough. He can't run like he wants.
No, the O-line has definitely had its ups and downs this year. Too many downs, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can't run if you don't get no blocking. That's the difficult part of playing running back.
Right.
Mr. Bill, great for hearing from you. I hope you have a great holiday.
All right, thank you. And tell Bobby hello for me.
I sure will. Man, put this on, Dino. We talked to Dean Klein Schmidt, longtime trainer with the Saints, and got put in, man, you were the auxiliary version of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Proud of you, my man. Proud of you.
Did that this summer. That was
that was
quite
great.
Humbling. Yeah.
You see all the hamstring injuries, and that's one of the reasons why, first of all, we're glad that you stopped by and see us. But what do you think is the main cause of that? And it's not just with the Saints. It's all across the board.
No, it is all across the board and all across all sports.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Look at the Pelicans.
Right.
But it has been a bane to the existence of athletic trainers since the beginning of time. I mean, the research is continues and just the injury still happens. I mean, unfortunate. A lot of different reasons. One of them is muscle imbalance. One of them is fatigue. One of them is, you know, lack of conditioning. Lots of different reasons.
Would diet play a part in that also?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely.
And hydration.
And certainly dehydration is an issue. But it's been a problem. We just shake our heads at it. We used to classify them mild, moderate, severe, or grade 1, 2, and 3. Kind of depends on how long the guy's going to be out. And all the imaging that we do now is available, the CTs and the MRIs that you can do. You kind of get an idea of pretty much how long the guy's going to be out.
Wow.
But it's I had one coach, one of the 13 head coaches that I had over my career. That
Dean, everybody say, Mike, you ought to write a book about everything. No, Dean ought to write the book.
No, I can't.
Some of those guys are still alive, Dean. Oh. That might be a libel suit, but go ahead.
But what this coach said was, hey, whatever you tell me, the guy's ready to go back, I'm giving him 2 more days. I just want to, you know, just got to make sure.
Okay.
That just a little extra healing that's going on there with those muscles. But it's tough. And I sympathize with the sports medicine staffs that have to deal with them because
was that something that was really more, was prevalent when you first started, like, say, late 60s, 70s, mm-hmm. than it is today? I would say it's more today than back then, right?
Yeah, I think, and I'm not sure why that is, but, you know, maybe it's guys are bigger, taller, faster, stronger, you know, they're lifting more. There's more sophistication in the conditioning. But it just, all that being said, the injury still happens.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed, but our buddy Jim Nagy got interviewed today, general manager of the Jets. He got interviewed for that job today.
No kidding.
From the Senior Bowl.
I had dinner with him Tuesday night.
Keep that secret pretty good. I will give Jim credit on
wow.
that.
Wow.
Yeah, no, he got interviewed today with the Jets.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. That might be pretty enticing to him, except his wife's from Mobile.
Exactly, because he's not from there. He's a Michigan guy.
You got it.
Could he stay still involved with the Senior Bowl?
No. If you're the GM of the Jets.
I was going to say, that'd be tough.
You're not taking no care of the Senior Bowl at that point. But, man, Jim's does a great job with the Senior Bowl.
He
I know really you've
does.
Been there. How many years you've been
this
involved?
This will be my 54th.
Man, what?
I started in January 1972.
I know they had the Senior Bowl before you, but not too much.
not too much. You're right. You're right.
Your thoughts on the game today and the extension of the season now, which, Dean, we 17 today, and we just hop, skip, and jump away from 18 games in the season. And how guys will be able to hold up for an 18 games regular season?
Yeah, I think we're going to find out an awful lot about that. You know, and then the short downtime, you know, 4 days, you know, Thursday night game, and then you know, they played on Sunday.
How'd you like to play a Wednesday game after you play a Sunday game?
I wouldn't like to do that at all. Not at all. Matter of fact, I believe my daughter works for the Texans over in Houston. She's been there 10 years. I think they play on Christmas Day. I believe.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's going to be some rapid recovery, as we used to say.
Coaches love that.
People always tell me, oh, how do they practice on those 3-day weeks? What? No practice. Dude, they ain't got no practice on a 3-day week.
Right. Yeah.
You maybe have a walkthrough, you look at film, but practice? Yeah. That's for the unskilled when it's 3 days.
Exactly. And then the traveling team has got to fly a day before. So they're really, really down.
But I think, Dean, that is really going to dramatically change this game from a roster standpoint. How you look at your depth.
Yeah.
Because you got to keep those guys afloat
for late in the year.
Yes.
Because now everything, the calendar is going to get pushed back with everything.
Yeah. Well, and earlier you were talking about Jim Nagy at the Senior Bowl. I was there for a meeting Tuesday, and they've already got commitments from 110 players. They want to get 140. They want to get 70 guys on each team because one of the reasons is you got to look out for those injuries that might happen during the week.
And some of the guys, they'll practice because they know that's the most important thing. Man, they ain't playing in no game. I'm going to come for the practices, the game. Now, that's not normal the case. Normally is, I don't want to practice, but I want to play in the game.
Right.
But at the Senior Bowl,
opposite,
it is flipped.
Exactly.
We're taking a break here on Sports Walk. When we
return. Thank you, Dino. Appreciate it, buddy.
Appreciate
thank you
guys.
So much.
I thought he was going to be hanging out with us.
If he wants, he can, but he's got a roll.
Thank you for the time. Taking a break. We'll be back when we get return to Sports Talk. Packers beat writer for the Green Bay Press Gazette, Ryan Wood, will join us as we get ready for Monday Night Football up in Wisconsin. We'll hear it all right after this. We're at the Game Bar and Grill at the Treasure Chest Casino. Sports Talk till 7 o'clock right here on WWL. Welcome into Sports Talk. We are at the Game Bar and Grill at the Treasure Chest Casino. Now welcoming into the radio huddle, Ryan Wood, Packers beat writer for the Green Bay Press Gazette, also Green Bay Nation co-host on WFRV Local 5 TV. Ryan, thank you so much for the time today. How's it going up there?
You know what? It's a lot colder than where you're at right now. Let me paint this picture for you. Right now, I'm about to go into this Buffalo Wild Wings right after we get done talking. I'm sitting in my car, and we are currently getting pelted with snow. I mean, it is Green Bay a week before Christmas, and it should be, there's a real possibility it's going to be like that Monday night. 60% chance of snow here at Lambeau Field for Monday night's kickoff against the Saints. We'll see. You know, it's wintertime in Green Bay.
The script writers wouldn't have it any other way, right?
It's pretty. The problem is you got to shovel it, and that's not fun. Mm. You know, and if you live up here and if you're like, I've seen snow, you know. I mean, if you're not used to it, it's like, oh, that's pretty, especially at Lambeau Field. There's nothing in the NFL like a snow game at Lambeau Field. It turns into this giant snow globe. It's kind of cool, but the shoveling's not fun.
Ryan, I was going to ask you, you grew up in the Midwest?
I did, North Central Indiana. Now, we got winter there too, but it's a little different in Green Bay.
I would think so, just a little bit. Talking about the Packers team, I think the big difference this year is how well they're coached on the defensive side of the football. Bobby Hebert and I were talking about this Monday night. He was like, what's the big difference? I said, one, they got Josh Jacobs on offense. And secondly, would you look at how well they play on the defensive side of the football? And, man, I think about the linebacker y'all got in round two. I saw him play, scouted him at Covington High School in Louisiana. He was not a top 12, 14 guy in the state of Louisiana. He signs with Texas A&M. He was the most improved player in the Southeast Conference a year ago. And what he's done this year, he's one heck of a player. But I do think you guys made the right choice at defensive coordinator. He has put all the pieces in place. They're really playing some great defense in Green Bay.
You know, Jeff Hafley is awfully creative, and we've seen that all season. He's got a lot of versatility and flexibility within his scheme, which is helpful because, if plan A doesn't work, you got to have contingencies. You got to have a plan B, C, D. And not every defensive coordinator, Joe Barry, before Jeff Hafley, if something didn't work, the game plan, there was nothing to fall back on. It was just, well, you're stuck in this now for four quarters. It's not like that with Jeff Hafley. If something doesn't work, he can go to something else, and he's got a lot of tools in his bag. But I think the thing that he's done the best is, what is coaching? Coaching is maximizing your best players. It's getting talent from all your players, but really your stars. You want your stars to shine. Edrian Cooper, who you mentioned, now a two-time NFC Defense Player of the Week as a rookie. That's maximizing a young kid that was the first linebacker taken out of the draft, has a ton of speed. They put him all over the field. He blitzes a lot. There's a lot of things that they can do with him, and that's putting him in positions to make plays. Xavier McKinney, another great example, right? He's been the best safety in the NFL this season. He's always been good. Xavier McKinney was all the reason why he had a big free agent price tag this spring. He's always been a good safety with the New York Giants. He's never been this good. Jeff Hafley has something to do with that. So he's really maximized the talent that he does have on the field.
Also, Javon Bullard is also another guy. I was telling this to Steve, and he was a good college player. He's been a better pro player. Now he's dealing with an ankle injury, but that's another guy kind of right off the college campus and the impact he's had on the Packer defense?
Yeah, you know, they've got a lot of young guys. It was a big defensive draft class, and they've brought those guys in, Edgerton Cooper, Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, fourth-round safety. And they've been really smart with how they've used them. You know, for example, Edgerton Cooper, this season, he's only played 35% of the snaps. Now, he had a three-game absence because of a hamstring injury, but they brought him along slow to the point where now it's a possibility that he could really close strong. He's going to be fresh. He's not running into that rookie wall. Same with Javon Bullard, who you mentioned, Evan Williams. We'll see if Javon Bullard plays this week. He missed last week's game in Seattle with an ankle injury. It's up in the air right now. It's kind of early in the week still, so we'll see. But he's been very versatile. He plays slot, play back in safety. They move him around quite a bit in the secondary.
One of the things, Ryan, I posted it on my X account or Twitter account, Jordan Love coming to the Manning Passing Academy, and he's got, you know, Peyton Manning watching him in the drills. And you've seen the progress with Jordan, and it was kind of a rough ride maybe early, and then finally he got the baton, and, boy, you see it. He's not fully developed yet, but, boy, does he have a ton of talent at that quarterback position.
Yeah, there's still room for him to grow as a quarterback. He's still, as much as he's come in and had success right away, there's still more out there for him, which is a scary thing because he's been
yeah.
pretty good. If the Packers win Monday night, they clinch a playoff spot, and it'll be the second time in as many seasons that they've gone to the playoffs with Jordan Love. If you would have said that 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when Aaron Rodgers was in the twilight of his career here in Green Bay, that when Aaron Rodgers leaves, the first two game seasons with Jordan Love, they're going to the playoffs. I'm not sure how many Packers fans would have believed you, but everyone would have signed up for that. I mean, that just does not happen, and they're in the midst of doing that. Week three last season is going to be very likely a game that lives in Packers lore and Jordan Love's lore. Obviously down 17-0 at home against the Saints and the fourth quarter comebacks. That was the first time that really Jordan Love showed the traits that have gotten him to where he is now. He's unflappable. There's nothing that shakes him. It doesn't matter if you're down 17-0 in the fourth quarter. He keeps playing. He keeps finding a way to make plays. He's never out of it, and he knows how to win. And when you have that at the quarterback position, a winner, which the Packers do, sky's the limit.
One of the things, too, is your addition of Josh Jacobs in the offseason and covered him at the University of Alabama. And talking to teammates of his, they were like, man, he's the toughest guy on the team. But if you understand how he grew up, football's not that tough. Man, life was tough for him to get to this point. And you see his in-between-the-tackle running skills, and he's got enough juice. He can hit the edge. He's a good receiver coming out the backfield. Against Seattle, he was a tilt-the-field guy against the Seahawks. And I think nothing against Aaron Jones, who's a good football player, but Josh Jacobs is an upper echelon running back in the National Football League.
Yeah, you mentioned the way that Josh Jacobs grew up. You know, he moved around a lot as a kid, and he's always just kind of wanted to find that home for himself, and he wanted to be the Raiders, but the business side of it got in the way. He's found that home for himself here in Green Bay, and what he's done is changed the identity of this Packers offense. I mean, through the decades, even with Aaron Jones before him, who is a phenomenal running back in his own right, having a big season as expected with the Minnesota Vikings, and absolutely beloved in that Packers locker room for seven seasons. Throughout the decades here, it's been Hall of Fame quarterback, passing game, that's the identity of the offense. Spread it around, air it out. This Packers offense with Josh Jacobs is different. They are a punchy-in-the-mouth, ground-and-pound, Josh Jacobs in a cloud of dust type of offense. And it's changed even play call. Like third and five now, it's kind of like a rundown because you might be able to set yourself up for fourth down and get two cracks for 5 yards on the ground. Josh Jacobs brings that element. He also establishes balance right out the gate. Last week in Seattle, the first eight plays, Josh Jacobs touched the football on every single one of them, two catches, six runs. On the 11-play opening drive, he could touch the ball on nine of them, the last play being a one-yard touchdown, which he has now six or seven this season, touchdowns from the one-yard line. The physicality, the balance, That balance especially helps Jordan Love, because once the defense is being pulled to the line of scrimmage, the deep passing game and having a quarterback that can make those throws, it all comes together.
Ryan, when you look at the roster, obviously you're talking about the weather conditions there too. Odds makers recognize it totally. Huge underdog, the Saints, coming into this matchup on Monday night. But if there's a weakness on this Green Bay Packers team, what is something that if New Orleans has a chance in this matchup that they can exploit?
Their biggest problem all season and the biggest concern for this Packers team as they head into the playoffs is going to be the pass rush. Now, they just had their second-best pass rush game all season against Seattle. They had 7 sacks, 12 quarterback hits. The only other time all season that they've had a pass rush game like that was Week 3 against Tennessee and Will Levis. They had 8 sacks Week 3. But that has been kind of the hidden piece, the missing, the absent part of this defense that's been quite good. It's a bona fide top defense all season, is getting home on the quarterback. They did it last week. I think this is going to be very interesting. You know, for the Packers right now, they're going to the playoffs. They've got 3 games left, and it's very possible that they're just going to be locked into that 6th seed in the NFC when you look at the rest of the conference landscape and how that shakes out. So it's about, in these 3 games, maximizing their chances to make a run. And pass rush is where it starts. This, you know, you look at the rankings, the stats throughout the league, Saints haven't given up a lot of sacks this season. I mean, they're in the bottom 10 of a fewest sacks allowed. So I think this is a good test for a Packers pass rush that is coming off a really promising week, potentially a springboard week. Can they do it again against a Saints offensive line, a Saints offense that has protected the quarterback better than a lot of other offenses in the league this season?
Ryan, definitely appreciate your time. Hopefully you don't have to dig out on Monday to get to the stadium.
Hey, let it snow, right? It's Green Bay in the winter.
Ryan Wood, Packers beat writer for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Always a great time. Thank you so much. Taking a break. We'll be back with more sports talk after this, talking to the voice of the Florida Gators, Sean Kelly, when we return as they get ready to take on Tulane in the Gasparilla Bowl. Coming back with more sports talk at the Treasure Chest Casino on WWL after the break. Back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Happy to break down now the Gasparilla Bowl tomorrow in St. Pete, Florida, on Tropicana Field between the Tulane Green Wave and Florida Gators. To help us with that matchup, the voice of the Florida Gators, Sean Kelly, joining us now. How have you been, Sean?
Been well, guys. Great to talk to you. Looking forward to a game against Tulane, and I just saw Tulane in their championship game recently, so it feels like old times for me in some ways.
Sean, when we do pregame for LSU and I'm driving back home, I always catch Florida football. It, for whatever reasons, it's all, man, you do a fabulous job. I'm going to be honest with you. And not just because you talking to us now, but, man, you do a great job covering the Gators. And, you know, to see all those Louisiana connections with Florida today. But I think one of the things with Billy Napier, and it's always a part of his DNA, is his ability to run the football. If it was at UL, it was the same way. And now that you got all the guys healthy, if it's Montrell Johnson, who played at De La Salle and was with Billy and Lafayette, and then the young freshman and Jaden Ball, and then Jacoby Jackson, that's what Billy wants to do. He wants to wear you down in the running game, and then he can take care of the passing, because he sets everything up for the young quarterback. And I think getting the running backs in line has been a big part of their success down the stretch.
Yeah, Mike, first of all, thanks for the kind words. But, yeah, I mean, the Napier secret here is he wants his quarterback to be able to read the box. So if you're running the ball effectively, they can't lighten the box and then or go more of a balanced look and cause your quarterback to make some tough decisions. If you're running the ball effectively, that defense has to stay honest with regard to how they want to lighten or weigh down the box, and it allows the quarterback to make decisions. It's also about playing complementary football, which if you look at the Gators and how their season turned around, it was how they controlled the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football, and then that allowed offense not put the defense in bad positions, and then also defensively to start taking the football away and giving the offense more of those possessions to then run the ball and hang on to it, kind of the Napier way. So when all that stuff started to kind of come together, that's when Florida's season started to turn in the right direction.
Also, too, to get DJ Lagway back healthy? Because, man, it's kind of a crazy situation because you had a veteran quarterback in Graham Mertz. He goes down in game one. DJ, hey, kid, get in there. Make it happen. Then he gets hurt. But you saw the maturation of DJ along the way. And, you know, I saw a little of him in high school. I understand why basically every school in America was after him. He's that talented. He can sling it. He's got enough mobility skills to buy him a little time, but he can put a ball in a tight window, and he's got some fearlessness that's not in him. He's willing to take that chance with a ball downfield because he trusts his arm.
I've just never been around a kid at his age that is like him, off the field, on the field. I mean, smooth is a good word to talk about. What you mentioned as far as his improvement, you know, you see improvement in chunks with young players. Seeming like every week there was something new in the progression, right? And then he's put in a rough spot. They have to go from the two-quarterback system when Mertz gets hurt, like you said, get in there, kid, and show him how to do it. You know, his first career start against Georgia. Come on, let's be real about this. He is really good on the deep ball, Mike. I remember in the spring, the first thing you notice is the size, and then this ball that just kind of like a racquetball coming out of his arm.
Yeah,
it's just firing off, but he was missing a lot. His footwork wasn't great. Well, now that he's, you know, figured out some of the mechanics, you know, like you said, he can put it in the tight window. He's more sure about his decisions. And we really haven't seen him use his legs as we all thought he might, because early on he was in a platoon situation and then the big old hamstring injury that really slowed him down for several weeks. So we might get to see some of that here in this bowl game to wrap up his freshman year, but just the way he conducts himself, the way the team kind of rallied around him, I'll give his teammates credit. When they were presented the fact that for the rest of the way your quarterback's going to be this true freshman, they did everything in their power to try and get him in the right position and not have him running for his life and get the run game going so that he had more balance to see that box. And, you know, all those things kind of started to click. You know, obviously the injury was just a part of a pretty wild roller coaster for the Gators. It's been one of the more strange seasons I've been around, guys, but here they are. They could win four in a row to end this thing, and I don't want him to do it against my old friends at Tulane, but that's probably what it's going to take.
A few years back, we had the Louisiana Line Camp. I'm sitting with Pete Jenkins, and Haynesville High School had brought about six guys there. And Pete says, Mike, who, and I'm going to clean it up, who's that guy that's working out there? It's Cam Jackson. Now, Cam was recruited by LSU, but, you know, that was some great issues. He goes to Memphis, and he ends up now at Florida out of the transfer portal. You talk about a big man on the field. Man, Cam Jackson, he's a huge guy, and you can't miss him out on that football field.
Yeah, 6'6", 342. He could make his 36th career start. But think about that journey. Obviously, Haynesville, Memphis, ends up in the SEC. He's going to be in the NFL. I mean, the size just blows you away. But he moves so well, and he's learned a few things about playing defensive line this year.
Sean, thanks so much for giving us some time. Have a great call tomorrow. 2:30 Central kickoff. We'll definitely be tuned in.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, guys. Thanks. Cheers. Merry Christmas.
Sean Kelly, voice of the Florida Gators, joining us there, taking a break. We'll be back with more of Sports Talk right after this here at the Treasure Chest Casino on WWL. Closing out the 5 o'clock hour here on Sports Talk. Next hour, we're going to get into some Pelicans talk. Ali Cosell, credentialed NBA writer, will be joining us to break it all down right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. Welcome on into Sports Talk. We are heading into some Thursday night action on the hardwood and on the gridiron right here on WWL. On the Big 870 AM, 7 o'clock, the Pelicans will be tipping off against the Houston Rockets. Meanwhile, on 105.3 FM, Thursday night football, we got the Denver Broncos taking on the L.A. Chargers in that matchup. And I'm proud of myself there, Mike. I mentally did not say San Diego Chargers. It still slips every once in a while.
Yeah, just like Bobby with the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, it's hard to break that habit.
By the time he's going to get used to the Commanders, they'll switch it back. They'll be back to the Redskins. Steve, one of the things that has come out, it appears Carson Beck's season is over with. He'll be out of the college football playoff series, and looks as though the Bulldogs will hitch their wagon to Gunnar Stockton the rest of the way.
I mean, how much confidence should Georgia fans have in him to get the job done? Because they have, I might want to change my picks with Charlie Long's bracket that he gave us.
The one thing Gunner gives you is his ability to move on the field. You saw it against Texas.
Yeah.
Man, he can run. Now, again, this was not the best year for Carson. Man, him coming to Manning, and we talked for quite some time. I thought he was going to break out this year. And he rode the roller coaster from – he looked great, and then he looked god-awful, and sometime in the same game. So Plug's been kind of pulled because of the injury to that ulnar nerve, and now you're going to go with the – and can't say he doesn't have some playing time, because look what he did in the second half against Texas. You know, he didn't mess that up at all. So give Gunnar Stockton a lot of credit, and so it's going to be his show now. But I would feel a lot more confident about that pick of Oregon today.
Yeah, I ended up in my total brackets that we submitted. I have Oregon winning it all, so
yeah, me
hoping,
too.
Hoping the quack attack comes through there.
Yeah.
Looking at Monday Night Football, Mike, the matchup between Saints and Packers, black and gold going into it, a heavy underdog, 14-point dogs at the right now. It could even be on the rise. We'll find out more. But, yeah, the news of Alvin Kamara, his groin injury being significant and something that will likely keep him out of this game and maybe the rest of the season. We're still waiting to find out more on that. Obviously, a big blow to the Saints offense, who is not just one of the few playmakers they have left, but their main guy.
Well, it's one of the few proven playmakers, because about Kendra Miller. It's a great opportunity for him now to step up to the plate and, you know, get bat on ball. Hopefully he can stay healthy, because I've never questioned his talent. I saw him play at TCU. Man, he was a big-time player there. But, again, you got to have availability. And I understand Dennis Allen's kind of walking on the edge with him, because it was not all about talent. I think a lot of it was a little bit of maturity, understanding to get yourself into proper shape to play pro football in a long season. And I think Coach Allen questioned that numerous times, and you heard it in his voice every time he talked about Kendra.
Oh, he couldn't hide it, right.
And again, you get – okay, you are a human being, and you know what's on the line, so to speak. You know, my job's riding on you. Come on. You can't always be hurt.
Then it was one hamstring, and then, you come back, and then it's the other hamstring.
And then you see Darren Rizzi take a little bit different approach with him, thinking maybe that will work better than – what Dennis Allen's approach did. We can't work any less. So, hey, Kendra, it's your opportunity. Go make the best of it. Again, we all know he's talented enough to do this, and he's a running back that turns lower body power into speed, and you can see it on the field where, you know, his initial move is power, and then he gets that step or two, and then it's speed up the field, and catches the ball pretty well coming out the backfield. It's a great opportunity for Kendra to show why the Saints picked him in round three.
You think in this matchup Monday that we get to see maybe more of running back Jamal Williams too in the mix, because his usage has been very little to sparse all year long.
I think
he didn't even have a carry last game.
Okay, that goes to show you not what one head coach, but two head coaches think about him.
Yeah.
And I think maybe Detroit people question, why did they go to Montgomery? Why didn't they re-sign Jamal after having a great season? I think you understand why. They saw a little bit of that toward the end with Jamal. And, man, he's a great guy.
Sure.
You know, he's super to talk to, always energetic. But, you know, the man upstairs only give you so many carries. You know, that speedometer will only turn a certain way. And maybe it's toward the end of the speedometer for Jamal.
It's just really baffling to see such little usage.
Why would you sign Clyde if you felt Jamal was the guy that could be your number two back? Now, I mean, he may be number two in this game.
Sure.
But what happens afterwards? You signed Clyde. That was a two-headed coin. That just not was about Kamara's injury, but the disappointment Jamal Williams has been with the Saints.
Yeah, because you would think going into this game against the Packers, maybe some snow conditions and the cold weather, that you want to ground and pound this team, and that Jamal Williams seems like a guy that'd be fit for this matchup. But I can't even say you can count on him just because I haven't seen it from him.
I haven't seen anything in that. And what Ryan brought up, who covers the Packers, were one of the things the Packers have not done well this year is rush the quarterback. That's why you see Edgerton Cooper being shot out of a cannon at the linebacker position, because they can't get pressure with their front defensive line. Saints got to think about that, because if there's a hole there, that's where it's at. That they have not been able to get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. They did against Seattle, but you look at the other games, a lot of times quarterbacks had a lot of time to throw the football against Green Bay. Can that happen against the Saints? We're fixing to find out.
You mentioned Edgerton Cooper there. Coming out in the draft, did you think he was going to be able to explode onto the scene so quickly? And he's not even getting a lot of snaps right now.
When Charlie and I, because we do it every year with the draft breakdown, he was my number one ranked off backer. In essence, they didn't really use him as a pass rusher at A&M, you know, because he was an off-ball linebacker. Man, he can play. He's smart, he's fast, he's instinctive, he's a really good open field tackler. Where I thought he got much better is in the coverage part of the game. And so I thought he would be a good player. But to be good this quickly, no. I didn't think he'd be that good this quickly. But man, he's a smart young man, understands this game at a certain level. And so, man, I'm thrilled for him. Them Louisiana guys doing well, I always pull for him.
Yeah, not too bad as a rookie. Already two NFC Defensive Player of the Year, the week honors.
Not too bad. Not too bad for Cooper.
We're here on Sports Talk getting ready for Thursday Night Football as the Denver Broncos are in L.A. to battle the Chargers on 105.3 FM coming up at 7 o'clock. Meanwhile, over on 870 AM, the Pelicans out to snap a four-game losing skid and just notched their second road victory of the season when they take on the Rockets in Houston this evening. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off right here.
We'll have that red court, though.
No, that was only for the NBA Cup. And we were kind of talked about it last time I was here. Blinding, it was hard to follow the basketball for me. I was like, am I getting old?
No, you're getting old, but that's not the reason why that court is that red. My goodness. That is eye-catching, to be honest with you, when they did it for the tournament.
We're going to take a break. When we return, we'll get into that Pelicans versus Rockets matchup with NBA reporter Ali Cosell will join us. So stick around on WWL. We're out here at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill right next to the sportsbook where you can place your bets on tonight's game or all the action for the college football playoff, the weekend action in the NFL, and also any table games. You got blackjack, craps, and all the slot machines going on. Much more here at the Treasure Chest. Taking the break. We'll be right back with more on WWL after this. Back on Sports Talk, getting ready for the Pelicans taking on the Houston Rockets. Pre-game coverage about to start on 870 AM at 6:30. Tip-off comes at 7 o'clock in Houston to help us break it down. Credentialed NBA writer Ali Cosell now joining us. How you been, Ali? What's going on tonight?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing well. Looking forward to Christmas. And really, with the Pelicans, you're wondering who's going to get traded, because we know somebody's going to be leaving before the deadline.
Ali, you bring that up, and we were watching the television, and I mean, I got a couple texts about it. Looks as though certainly a lot of rumors about Brandon Ingram possibly getting traded to the Nuggets. Your thoughts on that? I know we've heard a couple different locations that I've shown a lot of interest in Brandon. I think the only bad thing about that is what would you get in return? Because I want a fair deal. I'm not going to give him away. I don't want to give anything away. I'm not the Red Cross, as far as I'm concerned, if I'm the Pelicans. You know, I want fair value back. But would that make a lot of sense from both sides, depending on what you could get back?
Yeah, Mike, I think it does. That's toward the summer and then since the summer. I haven't really heard of any good landing spots for Brandon Ingram, especially with what the Pelicans would likely get back. Like, for instance, the deal with the Jazz that's supposedly floating out there, that John Collins was the main part coming back, and he's just largely a backup big at this point in his career, so you didn't want that. But with the Denver Nuggets, here's the thing. I think they're ready to move off of Michael Porter Jr., and this is somebody that I know David Griffin, a lot of other executives around the league, just a few years ago, really coveted. right? A 6'9", 6'10" guy who can just shoot lights out from three. So can you imagine him sitting on one side, Trey Murphy on the other, right? Two basically 6'10" guys that'll be able to shoot over any defense. I think that's the alluring part, right? Brandon Ingram doesn't really fit if this organization is going to stick with Zion Williamson, because you've got DeJounte Murray as your other main ball handler. So that's just too many. And then when you factor in the tax, right, how much you're spending, somebody's got to go. So I like it from the standpoint that you wouldn't have to worry about Brandon Ingram's next contract. And then although you're losing a better playmaker and a shot creator than, say, Michael Porter Jr., it just feels like Porter Jr. fits better, right? You just want parts around a team like with Zion, DeJounte, or if it's not even Zion, whoever else, maybe you get somebody in the draft, your next star. So I absolutely do like this one. I think this one has legs, real legs.
I've also heard about Jose possibly and teams up north, Knicks, Nets would have an interest in him. You know, Jose, crowd favorite, certainly with that. With the way he plays, because, you know, he gives you everything he's got. He's pedaled to the metal on every time he's out on the court. Have you heard that also, possibly Nets? Because I've heard from a couple different people that they think maybe there's been some discussions there with them on Jose Alvarado.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard that much regarding Jose. I know the Pelicans still like him. And then when you look at how much he's making, right, this year, it's under $2 million. Next couple of years, $4.5 million each. You're not in no rush to move him when you know he's one of the locker room leaders, one of the fan favorites.
Right.
He can help win you a game, right? We've seen it plenty of times here. And now that he's become a better three-point shooter, right, you need a backup point guard to DeJounte Murray. And really, it's Jose Alvarado and there's nobody else. So, no, I haven't heard that Pelicans are going to move him. I think what it would take to, say, get a Jose Alvarado or maybe pry Jordan Hawkins from this team, it would require real value coming back. And I just don't think teams are going to give that up. The only way I actually see, Mike, if Jose Alvarado leaves, is if it's in maybe some kind of package deal with BI. That I could foresee, right? These two guys get along. Like, for instance, Denver, I think they would love both of those guys. It would help their championship odds for this year tremendously. It's depending on what you get back if you're the Pelicans and whether you do add Jose to any deal or by himself.
You mentioned Jordan Hawkins a little, and obviously a positive for the Pels tonight. He is available for action at Houston. It has been some time since the Hawks been on the court dealing with that back issue. Obviously, this team needs some offensive punch because scoring has been down, and you kind of, you know, it's to be expected with all the injuries you've had, but any kind of firepower back in this lineup right now is definitely a welcome addition.
Yeah, it is, and especially if Hawk is healthy, right? Because he came back from missing a few games prior to this last layoff where he's missed 8 games when he was just, they thought he was just dealing with like lower back spasms, found out it's actually something more significant. So you just hope he's healthy, because with a guy like him, right, everything is basically up to his movement, right? Because he's always running around on the court trying to find that open shot and then elevating over the defense. And he wasn't able to do that for the last month or so. And here's the other thing you really want to see from Jordan Hawkins. If he is healthy, could he be the guy that replaces maybe someday kind of C.J. McCollum's role on this team, right? Because next to Brandon Ingram, I really think that C.J. McCollum, unlike B.I., has a lot more value around the league and potentially will get moved at this deadline. So a guy like Hawk, he's got an opportunity, right? Earn some minutes now, show you can play, but make the Pelicans' decision that much easier, right? To say move off of C.J. if there comes a deal for him, and then you can just transition to him. Because we've seen it, right? He can light up a score board with a bunch of threes, just shots in general, and he knows how to get himself open. But if he can stay healthy and add some parts to his game, maybe get a little tougher on defense, show some more chops rebounding the ball and finishing at the rim, then you move off of CJ, right? You create some space on your salary caps because you're getting rid of $30 million plus, and then you're going to have Jordan Hawkins now for the next few years watching him at a much cheaper contract.
Ollie, give us a scouting report on the Rockets. That's a team that's been a little bit in transition. And your thoughts on kind of the state of affairs for Houston from an NBA standpoint. Right. You know, because that one time, you know, they were such a really good basketball team, hit the skids a little bit, and now kind of a, I don't want to say a soft rebuild. I think they're in the rebuilding stages now.
Tough defense tonight, right?
Yeah,
they're coming out on the other end of this, like, 3-plus-year rebuild, right? Dealt James Harden, went away from potentially, right, they were on the doorstep of getting out of the West and into the NBA Finals. Just couldn't ever get past the Warriors. But now this team, I think it's poised, right? They started off great, right? Better than most people expect at 17-9. We just saw them in the NBA Cup, lost a tough game to, you know, number one OKC Thunder. But, yeah, this is a team that, bar none, puts all the emphasis on the defensive end. And under a coach like Ime Udoka, that's, of course, what he stresses. So they kind of taken that identity, along with Dylan Brooks. They signed Fred VanVleet as free agents. And so that's how they win games, right? They're just going to get in your face, punch in and out, do whatever it takes, and not going to give you anything easy. So I actually kind of like that model, right? Some teams are successful, right? Bad shooting teams, great at defense, and they're doing really well. Another one's Orlando Magic. And honestly, guys, just an aside, you wonder if the Pelicans should have gone down that route, right? They got a defensive-minded coach. They had Dyson Daniels. Should they have sunk more into the defensive end and just you win games that way, right? Because some teams this year, like the Rockets, they're doing that this year.
Ali, you brought up Orlando, and it's funny. We had Nick Frizzell on yesterday, and I asked him about the surprise team, and the first thing that came out of his mouth when I said, would it be Orlando? And he was like, absolutely. That he really, he said, I didn't think Orlando would be this good, this poised early in the season. Now, again, it kind of a small sample size, but what you see from them is really impressive.
Oh, my goodness. Look, they lost Paolo Banchero, I want to say 5 or 6 games in the season, right? Played as many as Zion Williamson, and that didn't derail them one bit. Franz Wagner took over for them as the number one guy, and guess what? He carried the torch. He still isn't the greatest three-point shooter, right? He's still working on a shot, but boy, he does everything else well. So, yeah, that team, I love the way they've drafted the last few years, right? Got Paolo Banchero. In the previous draft, they got Franz Wagner and Jalen Suggs, who I absolutely love. Kind of the Herb Jones mold, but, you know, stronger, more physically, and a better shooter. So you love what they're doing, right? They're solely built on defense. I think they're averaging about 107 points a game. And in today's NBA, you would think that's not enough. Right? That's almost how much the Pelicans average. But yet they're what? I think they're 17-11, something along those lines, while key guys have missed time. Yeah, I love the Magic. Next to maybe the Rockets, Orlando probably is, like, I guess, the number two, right? Biggest surprise, positive surprise in the NBA.
Ali, curious about Zion Williamson. I saw some footage today. Someone had filmed him doing some warm-up stuff on the court with the team. Any idea on how closer he might be to a return from that hamstring issue?
Yeah, we watched him get up shots yesterday after practice. I mean, he seemed to be moving around really well. A lot better than, say, he was about just a week prior to that, where he was literally just skipping rope, basically doing all his work on Nautilus machines. So, yeah, he's now transitioning to where he's able to put some more stress on that hamstring. So with him, honestly, if I had to guess, I would say maybe he's 3 to 4 weeks away. Now, he's a guy that you know is going to require a lot of hurdles, right? He's going to have to prove he can run up and down the court full speed, do one-on-one, three-on-three. And, you know, just like in years past, they make him go through all these hurdles, space them apart by at least, what, 3 or so days. So that's why I'm guessing, like I said, an estimate, maybe 3 to 4 weeks more without him.
And there's been obviously, we were talking about the trade talks. With Zion, there hasn't been any negative news coming out from him where he's trying to push his way out of New Orleans, right?
No, nothing of the sort. That actually hasn't happened in a while, I feel like. He and the Pelicans, honestly, have been, the relationship's been better with both he and his family and the Pelican side for the last year or so, better than it was previously. So, no, there's no concerns there, really. What you want to see, and yes, I know he wasn't as one of the guys we're protecting, right? Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, even if he do not trade list. But again, Pelicans aren't going to trade Zion Williamson because they're not going to get the return that they would want, right, for him. And I'm talking about multiple first-round picks, maybe a good young player or two. That's nowhere near on the table right now. So he's going to come back, open arms. He's got to prove himself, right, both to the Pelicans and around the league that, hey, I can get through a season, two seasons, and then get to the playoffs healthy. He hasn't done that yet.
Looking at the rest of the matchup before we get into the new year for this Pels squad, how are things shaping up? I know after the Houston game, they come back home for a bout against New York and then Denver, and then I guess Houston's around again. But overall, the outlook for this Pels squad as they're trying to get themselves out of the gutter in the Western Conference.
Yeah, so after this game in Houston tonight, they'll be home for the rest of the games, at least for the rest of this calendar year, right? I want to say it's 5. So So that's a good thing. Fans can come see him, and it's all, I think, really good matchups, right, against winning teams. So where you're going to get a win, I'm not sure, but I'm not sure if anybody's expecting them or even wants them anymore, right? You're thinking about their draft pick and what you can maybe land a Cooper Flagg or a Dylan Harper. But what you want to see, though, is the team kind of come together, right? Especially DeJounte Murray, right? The guys you know they're going to be here.
Yeah.
See them start playing better, right? DeJounte Murray's had a couple games now with 8 turnovers. That's not typically what he does. Trey Murphy's usually a 40% three-point shooter. We haven't seen that guy, right? So that's what you want to see, especially on this homestand. See some of these guys that are going to be here for a while, guys like Hawkins, right? See them show out.
You mentioned with Murray struggling with those turnovers. How much has that been addressed at practice, and how does he snap out of it? Because I know he's not a guy in his career that's, you know, been this turnover prone.
Yeah, prior to this year, the most turnovers he ever had in the game was just 7, and he only did that one time. So it's kind of ridiculous. But again, we've seen just about everything that could go wrong this year has gone wrong, right? So not a surprise. Thing with him, I think more than anything, is he's jumping back in the fold. Kind of felt the pressure. I've really got to, you know, elevate this team if we wanted to still have a chance. And this was a couple of weeks ago, you're thinking, to get back up in the standings, fighting for that play-in tournament. So I think he was, you know, like I said, trying to either do too much, make a pass that wasn't there. And, of course, you're trying to get your timing, too, right? When you're a point guard, right, you know how fast the game moves. It's a ridiculous pace. Right? Teams have never played faster than they are now. So I think that's honestly a combination of all those things. Have led to the increased amount of turnovers. But I think that number is going to come down. Like you said, Steve, he has typically not done this. And furthermore, I know he really cares about the game. And what I mean by that is he studies game tape, right? He really prepares ahead of time. So he's not the guy that you would expect to even do this just because he's not solely relying on talent.
Ollie, always great talking to you. Appreciate your insights on the game. Hopefully we get a W tonight, can pull off the upset in Houston.
Yeah, it would be nice just to get a couple good feel wins, right, over the next couple of weeks or so, right? Because what is it? They've gone 2-19 in the last 21 games. That's a sick to your stomach type of feeling.
Yeah, no question about it. Thank you, Ollie. Appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Ollie Cosell, credentialed NBA writer covering the Pelicans. Pre-game coverage going on right now on 870 AM leading up to that 7 p.m. tip-off against the Rockets. On 105.3 FM at 7 o'clock, we'll have Thursday Night Football. Right now, we're taking a break here on Sports Tech. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are here at the Treasure Chest Casino, gearing up for a Thursday night affair in L.A. between the Chargers and the Denver Broncos. And it'll be interesting to see, obviously, the head coaching matchup. You know, that's a primetime bout right there, Harbaugh versus Peyton.
They don't care for one another either.
Right, exactly.
So that's no secret. But they both have different styles in the way they coach and handle things. You know, Jim's rigid. He's going to kind of stick to what he's always is known. That is one form. Sean's a little bit more open about stretching the rubber band and doing things a little different, and it worked for him this year. Okay, they've been more of a defensive-oriented team. Every once in a while, they shoot up a bunch of points, but a lot of it is set up because their defense has played so well this season. And when you go into the season with a rookie quarterback, you know you're going to have those highs and those lows, and he's handled Bo Nix extremely well. And I give Bo a lot of credit. I know one thing. He got a thick hide to him.
Yeah, same. I didn't think Bo was going to have this good of a year. And I'm saying that's anything out of sight and amazing, but he's definitely having a better season than I thought.
Yeah, and you think about his background, his dad, you know, being a player, and, you know, you grow up in that environment, and things were a rocky road for him at Auburn. He came in the highly recruited guy. He was going to be the savior. It didn't work out that way. He goes to Oregon and how it worked out. Man, everything worked for him with the Ducks, and got to the point he really sold himself to Sean Payton. Sean was a big advocate of Bo Nix, and he gave him the keys to the car. A lot of times, listen, coaches say, oh, I don't mind playing rookie players. They full of you-know-what. They do mind playing rookie players because, you know, we had one of them here, used to be a head coach with the Saints. He was like, rookie players make rookie mistakes. And my thing is, you got veteran players making rookie mistakes. So why are you worried about that? You play the best guy you can, and Bo needed to be in his system. He needed to be hard coached, and that's exactly what he's getting here with Sean. And with Justin Herbert, I think you can see what Harbaugh's trying to do. He's trying to build a rushing attack while not everything is put in the pockets of Justin Herbert to make play after play after play in the passing game. You got to give a little bit of balance there, and we've seen it. It's worked pretty well this season. Steve also, too, we get a lot of people ask about it in this time of the year, too, especially in college football, people coming and going. But LSU got a commitment today from Middle Tennessee punter Grant Chadwick, and that's a spot LSU, you know, they needed to get the guy. And he, as a freshman last year, he averaged 43.4 yards a punt. He was on the Ray Guy list. So them being able to bring in Grant, who I watched him at Middle Tennessee. Man, he puts a lot of air under those shots. And you understand why LSU would be interested in getting that veteran punter in the lineup. So they were able to get a commitment from Grant Chadwick. Now, this is no surprise, but I see it's all over, that Kyren Lacy declared that he's coming out early for the draft. Well, my thing is, Monday, he declared that he was going to the Senior Bowl. You know, it don't quite mesh. But this is no surprise. You know, when you announce you're going to the Senior Bowl, you're not coming back play at LSU, and he also won't play in the bowl game. Now, Braden Swenson has announced he will, and I get it with Braden. He wants to put some more tape out there because he really has been a one-hit wonder, really has, with LSU. And, man, you could have given me a lot of guesses. I'd have never thought Braden would have played as well as he did this year. And so he is going to play in the bowl game. Kyren won't. And so I guess Kyren had to make it official today. But when you say you're going to the Senior Bowl, you declaring you're coming out for the draft, that's really not a shock to me. Also, too, Jack Besh announced today the formal announcement that he was coming out early. Jack's a former LSU guy, goes to TCU, and, man, he's got a long family history at LSU. When Coach O left, he decided he was going to leave, too. And in a lot of ways, the way he's built, he reminds me so much of Puka Nacua.
Wow. That's a nice compliment.
They both built the same way. They can catch the ball well coming out of the backfield. He's a great set-you-up guy.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you got me. I set you up with a little move and gain a little separation. But if you look at them side by side, they close. They really physically close to one another. And I know Coach O had told me when he was here, they're going to try to use him more as a flex tight end. And BYU used Nacua a lot inside.
Yeah.
So, but he's had a much better pro career than a college career. And Jack really had a great senior season for TCU.
When you're looking at some of the needs still for this LSU squad to address in the transfer portal, is it still in the trenches, O-line, D-line?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Offensive line, defensive tackle, a safety. I think those are the three areas I would look at that they still need to add. Now, remember, when this transfer portal season ends, they got another one in the spring.
Right.
So, you know, your lineup is not set. You know, if it end when it's going to end toward the end of the month, because you go through spring drills, you're going to have guys coming and going again, and you got another round of transfer portal. How about that? Man, I love it. You know why? Because we got to work summer.
It gives us something to talk about.
It gives us something to talk about. I told this to Jay Johnson, thank God. You know, get me through at least until June 20th or later. You know, get me through that because now I know what's going to happen in baseball. The same thing. Recruiting, transfers, portal season.
Right.
So it gets us through some of those dog days of summer.
Yeah, and hopefully we're not jinxing the LSU baseball team. I know, obviously, we had high hopes for the Saints this season, high hope for the Pelicans, and it's been a huge letdown so far.
But that would really be a letdown if Jay didn't win at LSU this year.
Definitely me and Charlie Long have been talking. We're hoping Jay Johnson can save us.
Yeah, at least roll it through mid-June, Jay. Yeah, please, I got the novenas out for you because I know what's going to happen afterwards. Then you have that couple weeks where the transfer portal opens up for baseball, and then that'll take us – into July, and then we can see the end of the road that way.
Right. Soon enough, it'll be.
When, before you know it, it's going to be back to practice sessions for the Saints.
Yeah, three games left in the regular season right now. Week 16 kicking off tonight. Thursday night football action coming up at 7 o'clock right here. Right now, we're going to take a break on Sports Talk, return, wrap things up, and then send things off to our coverage of the L.A. Chargers hosting the Denver Broncos. Coming back right after this on WWL. We've been getting ready for Monday Night Football when the Green Bay Packers host the New Orleans Saints, but you want to win tickets to the Saints' final home game against the Las Vegas Raiders. That is Sunday, December 29th in the Caesars Superdome. Well, you can score two premium tickets to the game plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group, open bar with premium liquor and an all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May. It's all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. Just go to WWL.com/contest. Enter for your chance to win the Saints battle with the Las Vegas Raiders from Dudley DeBosier, official injury lawyers of the Saints and WWL. And boy, oh boy, injury lawyers, the Saints could use that too this year with all the banged up black and gold they've had.
Yeah, something like that. But it's just been a difficult year all around. And I think, Steve, what we're going to cover in the offseason may be more exciting than it is during the season.
That's a fact.
Because you're going to have to make some really difficult choices here. I'm not talking about new head coach and all that. That's going to happen.
Roster.
But I'm talking about roster decisions with guys that have been here a while. Eventually, you're going to have to say, hey, thank you. It's been a great ride, but you know, we got to move on. There is a business part to this that – it is ugly, but it's reality. And you got to face that if you're the Saints. You got to face it that this is not going to be a quick turnaround. It's going to take a while to rebuild this roster from a talent and also what I would say talent depth standpoint.
I was surprised. An article on ESPN today was talking about some of the biggest mistakes franchises had made over the last couple of years in the NFL. The Saints, they had re-signing Cam Jordan to that new deal they gave him.
Well, I think the biggest mistake was not re-signing Trey Hendrickson.
Right.
Man, I would have put that one
there.
I would have put that one right on top of the list. But you went with Davenport, who you saw had all this talent. Man, he just couldn't stay healthy, and then you wondered about was he really pushing himself.
Next Thursday night football, who dat?